Welcome to A Day in the Why, a podcast where I talk with fascinating folks about the jobs they've held, the things they've learned, and how well those line up with their values and goals. You may just learn something, but I hope you'll at least laugh along with us as we dive into the mistakes we've made, the lessons we've learned, and the secrets behind how we got where we are today and where we're going tomorrow. Welcome to A Day in the Why, episode number 8. Today's guest is Mark Larson, a gentleman I met when searching for a web designer role back in 2005, when my wife and I had moved back to Knoxville after living in Hampton Roads, in the Virginia area. Welcome to the show, Mark. I'm thrilled we could get together today because I miss you, of course, but also because you're the first guest I've had on that is officially retired. So we can kind of explore the road to your retirement state and talk about how your values and goals have changed over your career and now that you're no longer officially working. To start things off, can you give us an overview of what it is you're doing these days?
Well, you have to ask my wife. No, not truly. Retirement's a kind of a surprise for everybody because you go into it, either you're forced into it or you are prepared for it. And I'm in one of those people who kind of had to take it a little bit earlier because of some health issues I had. So what am I doing? I'm trying to combat and improve that health situation that I'm dealing with. But at the same time, I'm trying to rediscover a lot of the passions that I've had over the years. That it's kind of odd, as you age, some of those passions kind of dissipate. And I'm trying to resurrect some of those and get back involved in those. So for me, it's about being healthy and spiritually sound, making sure that I'm reading good books and filling my soul with good stuff, and having good meetings with friends like you, which always helps charge me up a lot. So my retirement is one of every day is its own day. There is still planning involved. There's still a calendar involved. You still have some of the great traits you developed over the years to help manage yourself in the business. You apply to your retirement. But for the most part, if you ask me what day it is, once in a while, I won't know.
No, is that retirement or is that an artifact of the quarantine, the weirdness we've had over the last
couple of years?
Oh,
I tell you, that just made this whole situation that much worse because not only was I thrown into dealing with this health issue, totally unexpected, didn't see it coming. And then suddenly I have the one thing that helped me improve the situation is called Rock Steady Boxing. And it's a heavy bag boxing program set up specifically for people with Parkinson's disease, which is the thing I'm battling. And so I had 2 years where I went twice a week religiously. I mean, I never missed.
Right.
And then COVID came and my boxing went away. And it's the one thing that we know. Medications do nothing for Parkinson's. They only help with the symptoms, maybe help my tremor a bit or those type of things. But the boxing and extreme intense exercise, cardiovascular and brain and those type of things, is one of the few things you can do to slow down the progression of the disease. So for a year, COVID stole that from me. And I'm right now trying to find the balance of cheating the Delta variant from getting any foothold in me. I'm trying to find a mask I can still use and box without passing out, and I'm working on that right now. But I'm back in the gym, and my intent is to stay there because without it, my symptoms have gotten slightly worse over this last year.
Now, is the boxing something that you could reproduce by having a heavy bag at home, or is it also the instruction and reflection that you get in the on-site, and the camaraderie from the on-site support?
Well, one of my favorite sayings is from a Dirty Harry movie, and it's a man's got to know his limitations. And I don't work out on my own. I'm not going to do it.
Right.
I might do it for a small period of time, but then I'm going to fall away. And the two things that kept me going to Rocksteady Boxing was that I had a gentleman who suffered from PTSD and couldn't drive, but he also had Parkinson's. So I would pick him up and take him to the gym. So that gave me a purpose and something that was good for me to do.
It shifted your perspective from being simply a victim to being empowered and actually being a caretaker.
Oh, yeah. And for me, I was sitting with a group of people. I had some skin cancer removed this last week. All the fun stuff you get when you get older. And I was talking to a lady next to me, and she goes, "Somebody actually called me elderly the other day." And I said, "Embrace it." I said, "It's fine." I said, "I set up a YouTube channel where I do my video game stuff, which I've been passionate about all my life. And I embrace the title Elder Geek Gamer because that's what my friends know me as. It's an Elder Geek." And when you get to my age, I'm 68 right now, I'll be 69 in this coming January. You've got to either don't sit on a couch and do nothing. Follow your passions. Wake back up. Go to the gym. Fall back in love with your spouse. Whatever it is you need to do, take these years because you never know how long you've got here. That was the big shock for me. Was suddenly I realized all these things I was going to do in my retirement, I don't get to do. You know, my motorcycles went bye-bye.
Yeah.
You've ridden with me. I got a great picture of you, me, and Darren.
Oh, yeah.
At the lake.
Yep.
One day, some years ago. And this is just in 2017. I was still riding right. motorcycles.
And suddenly everything changed.
Suddenly everything changed unexpectedly. I knew something was up, but I didn't know what it was. And finally somebody was able to diagnose it. And there is no test for it. It's a series of tests and indicators that say you have Parkinson's disease.
So, and once you're over a certain threshold, then it becomes more and more likely that that's what's going on.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, but okay. There's so many things. Like 10 years ago, I was diagnosed with a swallowing disorder, but they didn't put the two things together. That's one of the symptoms of Parkinson's disease because it messes with your muscles.
So you've had it for quite a bit longer than you've been diagnosed
with. I'm thinking 15 years.
Okay.
I'm thinking a good 15 years. I used to work on my motorcycle and I'd go to screw something in and I couldn't hold the screwdriver still. So tremor. Now here's the fun stuff. Depression and anxiety together, which is never any fun. Insomnia, which is a rough one. Loss of voice. You hear my voice is a little raspy today.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm doing the YouTube channel. It's a real challenge for me to project my voice on certain days because it messes again with the musculature of my vocal cords.
Right.
So anyway, not to bore you with all this fun stuff, but it's really changed the texture of my retirement, to say the least.
Right. Well, I can't imagine. And Mark's alluded to gaming a couple of times, so it's an interesting. I've always found it a little shaming on me is that Mark is a vastly superior first person shooter. Games like Halo, etc., to the point where. If I'm in a match with him, I pray that I'm on his team because he's just that good. And so when I heard that you had Parkinson's, irrationally, one of my first thoughts was, oh no, his gaming. You know,
yeah.
That's something that I know he really loves and cherishes and gets a lot of camaraderie out of with gaming events and such, getting together with friends. And so it's been comforting for me to know that you've kind of fought through it. And that is one of those, research and development projects that you've kind of followed. And now you're turning this challenge, this illness into an opportunity to produce content that serves people in your position.
Absolutely. And it's amazing as I came across different people who have Parkinson's disease and have YouTube channels and are gamers, how many young people there are. It's surprising that young onset Parkinson's is so prevalent. There's not a lot of people my age because it's just to be 68, 70 or whatever. But a lot of guys, when I was a senior vice president in the bank, the guys would go out and golf.
Right.
And I'd be in the back room with a Nintendo somewhere, you know, and I was always kind of ashamed of it. The nice part is I'm older now. I just tell everybody, this is what I do. This
right.
is one of my passions. This is where my channel's at. And I've got a good video on there that's my fight with Parkinson's disease from a gamer's perspective and talks about some of the things I've been able to do to kind of compensate. Because mm-hmm. as you're watching me now, Rich, you can see how my tremors are.
Right, yeah.
And that can be a real challenge. In fact, that's one of the things I knew something was wrong. I remember playing with a group of my friends one night, and I could barely hold the controller still.
I remember times where you would kind of retire from the games, you know, playing earlier in the evening and take a break.
Yep.
And now looking back, I'm like, well, now we know why.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Fatigue is also.
It wasn't because you were, you know, scared into hiding from playing with me. That's for sure.
I don't even want to tell people what my smile looks like on my face. It's an evil grin, actually. So,
you're juggling your family. You've got kids and grandkids.
Yeah, three grandkids.
Do you have great grandkids?
Not yet.
Okay. So you're doing that. You've got the fitness, et cetera. And it sounds like you still have fairly full days.
Oh, absolutely. I think the big fallacy is that you have all this time to do all these things. And between projects around the house,
yeah,
things I need to do outside. I have very little time to actually do my YouTube content. My goal is just to have one video a week, and I find that challenging.
Yeah. Yeah. So. This podcast that I'm doing, it's just a side thing for me, but it's really interesting, and it's proven incredibly valuable just in terms of my own morale in this weird time. And then getting back in touch with people that I've you know, drifted out of touch with, or giving me an opportunity to kind of step up to that next level of understanding with people that I've met and admired, but maybe haven't done any work with.
Right.
So I'm certainly not complaining about it either. It's fun having these things that take up your time, but it's also challenging to fit them in.
Yeah, absolutely.
But I admit the mental model I have of retirement is what you have kind of dismissed as a fallacy, in that you're going to have all this time to do all this stuff. And I'm realizing that maybe I shouldn't put as many things in my retirement bucket list as I've got there. Maybe I should just start pulling them out now, like making beer, for example.
Well, absolutely. Now I'd help be, I'd come over and help. I guess one of the things I would recommend to people is you don't know what tomorrow's going to bring. And I know that sounds contrite or, you know, everybody says it, but you really don't. You don't know what tomorrow's going to bring. And so my vision, my retirement was very different than where it is today, the reality of it. And anybody can fall into the same thing. It could be cancer, which God forbid anybody gets. You know, that you get COVID and have long-term COVID symptoms. Mm-hmm. There's so many things you can do. So if you have a passion today, that's why I think one of the things I always try to tell people, whether you have Parkinson's or something else, don't wait till tomorrow or a year from now or 2 years from now, because your situation may change. The gods of fate may decide, no, give this person a challenge.
They are capricious.
They are capricious indeed.
So what would you say is your favorite part of retirement? The whether foreseen or unexpected, what's the best part about retirement for you?
I have godfather moments, but not the bad part. Towards the end when he was working in his tomato garden and he was gardening a lot.
Yeah.
I don't garden, but I work in the yard. I do stonework and landscaping and those type of projects just shocked the heck out of me because I'm a techie geek.
Right.
But I find, especially with Parkinson's, is my mind is at peace when I'm in nature. And that's just a huge thing. We live on 10 acres. You've been there. We've made a lot of improvements to it. We just put a new gazebo in and spent time down there relaxing. So that's the...
It's kind of like a little wood elf commune down there. It's a beautiful little cabin and amazing grounds and very private.
Yeah, it is pretty private. People are shocked.
It feels like you're in the middle of a forest.
Yeah, people are shocked when they come down there and they go, I had no idea this was down here. I said, yeah. Good.
I think even flying, you know, just flying overhead, unless you're looking for it, you'd miss it very easily.
Absolutely. But that was a surprise for me that I would enjoy that time so much. So that's probably just one of the best things I can do if I'm having a bad day is just go outside and do something.
And the flip side of that is if you could remove, surgically excise some aspect of retirement, what would that be?
Well, clearly I'd cure my disease.
Well, that's not retirement, right? That's fate.
Well, for me, it's in a role into it, but you're right.
Fair enough. Well, let's say you were still working, you'd still want to remove the same thing. Okay. I'll let you have it because, you know, Parkinson's sucks.
But I only get one, so I've used it.
Thanks for sharing all that. I think I'm going to have to re-examine my long-term plan and see if there's anything I need to move up in terms of, you know, things that I've been putting off.
Yeah, I would suggest that.
I've put off writing a novel forever and a day, and now I'm finally engaged in starting to do
great.
That.
Glad to hear it.
I've really enjoyed that. There's a friendly competition between Patty and I because she's been writing a couple books for a while now, and she's really making good progress now. But I like to think that maybe the notion of her non-professionally degreed husband, with, you know, without the English degree, finish a book before her, she's not going to let that happen.
Yeah. That's healthy competition.
So let's take a step back, and now that we know what you're doing now, I kind of want to trace the history of how you got here. I came across you when you were running a small but really interesting media company.
Yeah.
And I know that, you know, you've been a huge banking executive in the past too, and those are a couple of weird dots that don't necessarily seem like they'd connect.
They don't, do they?
So I'm curious, what would you say that these stepping stones are in your life that really influenced where you are?
In my 20s, it was all about survival. It was low pay, and that was no way. I mean, I was making $800 a month at the bank. I was married, and we were trying to survive and could barely put groceries in the refrigerator. I didn't have a college degree. That's not the focus of my family at that time. I grew up in a troubled family, like a lot of people do, their own sets of troubles. So I didn't see that as a priority, and I didn't go to college. But I wasn't going to stay there and make $800 a month. So I went on a pursuit, and I started looking for companies that I wanted to align myself with and could take some of the talents that I had learned and disciplines and skills from the bank and translate them into this new job. So I lucked out. There was a company called MCI Telecommunications who had just broken the AT&T monopoly for the first time ever. And they were looking for people to help them fill their company with talent. And I got a job in there as a credit collections, setting up a credit and collections department in Phoenix, Arizona. And credit and collections sucks. You know, it's right up there with repossessing cars, which I did also.
It's an unwelcome activity. No one wants to assist you with it, et cetera.
You got it. But it was my door into this company. So while I was in the credit and collection side, I made friends with a marketing manager, and I found out that he didn't know how to run coax cable to all these CRTs we were putting out there for the customer service system. So I learned how to do it, how to tip the coax. And I helped him put all that cabling in. And when it came around the time that they needed a customer service manager, I moved from credit and collections and got a raise and went to that.
Something far more palatable.
Yeah. And for me, what I understood was two things. On my desk, my plaque was, good things come to those who wait, but only the things left by those who hustle. So I was one of those people. I was always in high hustle mode, not negatively, but positively, high energy, those type of things. And I also found out years later in a study that was done by executives across the United States, what was one of the most important things they looked for in a new hire? It wasn't their degree. It wasn't their specific skill set. Those are important. But one of the top items was, how easy is this person going to be to get along with? Think about it. As an executive, you're confronted with tons of things every day. So for you, one of the most important unspoken things is, can I get along with this man or woman?
Right.
And so I made sure that you could get along with me, and I was fun to deal with. So that helped catapult me. So through MCI, I was there for 6 years. I was there in Phoenix, St. Louis, Memphis, Washington, D.C., and Atlanta in that six-year period. And for me, that was no problem because I was a Navy brat and I was used to moving. But that really catapulted my direction. It was a startup company who didn't care about whether you had a degree or not and just wanted results.
And then you had the credibility of your time there that lets you get past the normal obstacles outside of that company.
Absolutely. I was recruited by First Tennessee Bank back in 1987 when I was living down in Atlanta. They moved me up here and I set up a call center for them. And then later also became their manager of quality across the banks. So that was a lot of fun. But I found, remember what I said earlier, a man's got to know his limitations. And a woman's got to know hers too. I like building things, but I don't like sitting back and managing.
You like maintaining them, you know?
Yeah.
Once it's built, it's done. The magic is gone. You have time to move on.
Exactly. That was a strength and a weakness that haunted me. And that's probably why I moved every year and a half, because I wanted to build something new. So for that, for the bank, to be with the bank for just about 6 years also, was I was just an odd duck out. You know, the guys would go golfing, I go play video games. But still, it was a great job, great people, great pay. And I had taken from where I was at $800 a month to executive level pay with all the benefits. So that was, I felt pretty good about it.
And you did it in an era where a college degree was seen as an ironclad requirement for that sort of thing, right? They would expect you probably to have an MBA.
Yeah.
And instead, you were able to accrue the credibility and the experience and the references, the network. To make it happen without that college education.
Yeah. And I resume built. Strategically, I would look at my resume and say, what can I put on there next? That when the next person sits down with me, they'll look at it and say, and find value in that. So that was my tactics from the 80s into the 90s, actually. And I think I left the bank in 92.
Okay. So let's talk about that. What spurred you to leave and what niche did you get into?
So I made a couple notes before I came over here. So we talked about the 20s being survival, low pay, no way.
Yeah.
Okay. The 30s were resume building, move to improve, and that was not a problem for me because I was a Navy brat and I was used to moving. So my 30s were moved to resume building and moved to improve. My 40s were a reality check. Here I was at the bank and I wasn't happy. And I should have been. I had a great package of benefits. I had great people. It was my internal unhappiness. And I looked back when I was a kid growing up in San Diego, California. I would hitchhike from San Diego to Yosemite on my own to work in the restaurant up there during the summer and then come home. I always thought I wanted to be a park ranger. And so here I am at close to 40 years old, and I'm looking at park ranger, bank executive. Park ranger, bank executive. Who's got your chocolate and my peanut butter? You know, because it was just so...
So you were looking at where you had envisioned yourself.
Yep.
And where you actually were.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And they were really far apart. And part of it's because we're all driven into the set of success. This is what we need to look like to be successful. And so I actually got a... remember Career Track? This may be before your time. Career Track did some really good self-improvement, work improvement things. And there's a tape set back on cassette tapes called Self-Empowerment. And it's like 12 tapes. In fact, I just bought a copy of it so I can digitize it.
Huh.
And that set me free.
Huh.
Reading, listening to the stories of people who became self-empowered.
Right.
Who started their own businesses, what they did and why they did it. That gave me the inspiration, cojones, to bail from the bank and start something on my own.
Yeah, because at that point you had a serious case of golden handcuffs.
Yep.
Because you're looking at, well, I can leave and very likely fail, right? Because a lot of new businesses just outright fail. Or you can stay where you are and continue to make the big bucks, but remain unhappy. And right. Once you've realized you're unhappy, it's staring you in the face every morning. It's tough to continue that.
Right, right. So that was a big thing in those 40s was that whole reality check. That's what made me change. I just looked and I said, nah, this isn't the direction I want to go. I need to find. And the one thing that so many people have said, any self-help book you read or listen to, they always say, do what you love and you'll succeed. And that's what I wanted to do. I wanted to find something I love to do and see if I could make that work.
So what did you do?
Well, when I first went out on my own, I went into IT work. I found there were a lot of small businesses around town that needed people who understood computers. I was a geek. Now, I built my own computers. I understand how they worked. I understand sort of the networking. And so I went out and did IT work under the Mark Larson and Associates brand for a while. And it was successful. It was a small company, but it was good. But then people have always called me Marketing Mark is one of my nicknames. I missed marketing.
Uh-huh.
And the company that you joined me with, Digital Media One, that was in the 2000s. We got very fortunate, got a very high-profile customer right out of the gate, set us up for success. We had a lot of fun running that company. And
yeah.
then the recession of 2008 hit, and everything came screeching to a halt.
Yeah. Suddenly, nobody had any spend.
No. Or they consolidated. In this case, one of our biggest clients consolidated all their stuff into New York. So there's nothing we could do about it. So we had to take the company and downsize it seriously. And then we reinvented that.
Yeah, because I recall that, I guess that was really kind of the pivot point. You went from servicing smaller companies, you know, building websites, capturing media, putting together content for them. You pivoted to something more along the lines of on the marketing side. Visibility and awareness and search of various companies. And so I believe, was it First View?
Yeah, First View. That's First View Online was born out of that specifically because I sat down with one of my employees who stayed with me and we worked it out. He actually helped me come up with a name. And we said, what can we do to help businesses? What can we do to honestly, I've been told in many of my success stories that I've read and listened to, always ask, how can I help? And I don't know it enough nowadays. But that was the whole thing. How could we help? And we realized that a lot of businesses who had an online presence had god-awful websites, had no idea what traffic was or quality traffic, spoke about hits. You know, what's a hit? Mosquitoes are hits. that business went well enough that when I was diagnosed with Parkinson's in 2017, my business partner bought me out. And then it's just been roses and lollipops since then.
Roses and lollipop. Well, that's it. That's the end of the podcast. We're going to end with roses and lollipop.
I think that's a great idea.
We've kind of talked about how you have traversed the career line and such. I'm curious how that translates, that evolution looks like if we're looking through the lens of values, values and goals. So in real life, many of us don't examine our values and goals very closely, at least not very often. But it's helpful to do that because yours may well have changed over time.
Yeah.
And you need to determine whether you're using your time in a way that's in alignment with your goals and with your values. So can you sum up the values that you hold most dear? And you can be as specific or general as you're comfortable with.
I'll be absolutely specific with you. I looked this up the other day. I shared this on Facebook in 2013. It was something I wrote in 1995. My son, Chris, found a copy of it in his Cub Scout box and sent it to me.
Huh.
And although I often fall short of what I'm going to tell you here, it still guides me today. And it's titled Success, and this is from March 14th, 1995.
Wow.
Success, it isn't what we say, but what we do. It isn't so much in the idea, but in the execution. It isn't how hard we tried, but how devotedly we persisted in our good causes. It isn't how long we live, but how richly we love and have been loved. It isn't how much we possess, but how much of our time and talent we willingly give. It isn't about control, but about gentle yet strong influence. It's never about things and always about people and the desire for good relationships. This is what success means to me. And that has always been at the front of my Franklin planner that I use for years since the 1995.
Yeah.
And I've always kept it in my head and I pull this out from time to time. Those values are still in place. And I've failed it a million times. I've fallen short, but they're still my values.
It's still a North Star.
Yep. Still a North Star.
I find it interesting how people encapsulate their values. Some folks have four or five labels that they kind of line up and say, these are my core values. And others, our mutual friend, Dan, Patton, he incorporated all of his values under a single term, humility.
Ah,
and so great. If he approaches everything with humility, his work, his personal life, his hobbies, everything, he's found that is a really simple rule that keeps him straight, you know?
I agree with you. I totally agree. We're sadly lacking that nowadays.
Yeah. And I'm finding myself examining my own values far more often doing this podcast. At some point, I'll have someone interview me for this podcast.
I think that's awesome. You need to.
So given that those are your values, what goals have you made throughout your career and what goals do you have in place now that kind of align with those values?
Well, you know, if you caught me with my goals down, because for me, it's more about, I don't know what Parkinson's is going to serve me on any given day.
Right.
So I guess if you want me to articulate something that I haven't articulated yet, I will take the opportunity to do that. And that is to make the most out of every day, to try to overcome whatever obstacle I have for that day, and have one more additional day to live and do something. There's nothing grandiose about my goals. I don't want to go on this big trip. I don't want to accumulate X amount of money. My goals are more immediate and small, things like humility, the values I just read you. You know, if I can stay true to those values, I will automatically achieve any goals that I may or may not have expressed. And I don't think goals are always expressed. Sometimes you have them back there and you don't even realize that they're pushing you.
Yeah, no, that's absolutely true. A lot of times you may not consciously recognize a goal until you've achieved it.
Yeah.
And you get that sense of catharsis and you wonder, where is this coming from?
Yeah.
And then you can take a step back and say, oh, okay.
Yeah.
I guess that was a goal, and I've done it now, and what's next, right?
I've achieved a lot. I don't have any big things that I want to achieve. I want to be a better person, and that's my biggest goal, be a better person and live the best life I can.
So what part of your career or early life do you think is the most responsible for forming that set of values that you captured in that prose from 95?
The time from I spent with MCI Telecom. It was just a wonderful, wonderful company. It had the mindset of we will foster growth. We will grow talent. We will give you the opportunity to reach and stretch yourself. And so for me, that time period was excellent. But I can't take away the time I spent with First Tennessee Bank. It helped mature me and do some different things there. So everything has been kind of an additive experience that's made me better along the way. But I still got a long ways to go. You never get – these are goals you never get to sometimes.
Sure. I know that I mentioned this once on a podcast already, but I worked a stint at Scripps Networks as an ad operations manager. And that was a move from design roles that I'd had for many, many years.
I remember when that happened.
Yeah. And it's a very business related concern. And I often, in the early years, kind of regretted that because I thought, well, that's when I went off the rails, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I went off in a different direction. Maybe that was a mistake. I've come to realize that, no, that was exactly what I needed to do and where I needed to be. because it gave me a comprehensive understanding of how that entire enterprise system made money.
Right.
And now that the complexity of enterprise and how these ventures profit, how they make a dime, is something that I just kind of inherently look for. And it's been helpful, right? And I never would have had that if I just stuck with pure design rules.
Oh, absolutely.
By the same token, if I had never taken up development, I would never had the curiosity to understand how these things are actually put together, how they're coded, how they're developed.
Yeah.
And I wouldn't have been as good of a designer without the understanding of how things that I'm going to hand off to a dev team are actually built, the practical constraints that they have to think about and trot out for us designers. Having that already sort of internalized put a set of blinders on me to a degree, because now I'm not really conceiving of thinking of things that are outside the scope of possibility. So you could say that it's a little bit limiting, but at the same time, that the flip side of that is the blinders is that it's a focus now on the feasible.
Mm-hmm.
And right. As you mentioned, we only have time on this planet. So the less I'm spending chasing puppies and rainbows, the more on track I am in producing a process or a product or a design. That ultimately was, you know, it was not a waste.
Yeah. You know, I used to ask somebody that something all the time when I'd see people I hadn't seen in a while and say, what's your happiness level? Because that's a question people should answer fairly often. What's your happiness level? It's right. Not where you want it to be. Fix it.
Right.
Because that's really what it's all about at this point. Being happy. If you're happy, everybody else around you is going to be happy.
And if you're not addressing it, then that can lead, you know, there's some painful questions you can ask there. What's your happiness level? 4. What are you doing about it? Nothing.
Right.
Why? Because X, Y, Z. Okay, what are you doing about that? Oh, well, I guess I should do something about that.
Well, and I tell people too, I said, somebody was lamenting the other day on YouTube that they just don't have time to get their YouTube videos up and done. And so I said, dude, if I can do it at 68 years old with Parkinson's disease, you can do it.
Yeah.
You've got to challenge people to do the things that's where good friends really come in. They can challenge you and say, look, Mark, look, Rich, you need to pay attention to this. And here's something I would just recommend you think about.
Right.
And that's good friends can do that.
Typically, the question I'm going to ask you now is kind of present tense, but it can be present tense and past tense in your case, because it's about sort of the tips and tricks that you picked up over time, specifically in terms of how you're managing the daily minutiae of all the things you had to do in banking and telecommunications and running your own businesses.
Mm-hmm.
So are there some tips or tricks, any rituals or habits that you found really influenced your success in those ventures and in remaining aligned with your values?
Yeah, you know, my day, it was the Franklin Planner, Covey's.
Franklin Covey Planner.
Yeah, Covey bought Franklin out. And adherence to that mindset and that structure of managing your time both at home
mm-hmm.
and business transformed my ability to get things done. And I always knew what I had finished up, what I needed to do today, and where I was headed. That to me was just pivotal. I mean, there's no question about it. And I tell people today, you know, we didn't have cell phones we could pop our to-do list into. But it's surprising to me how many people never put anything on a calendar. And to me, I tell people, look, if it's not on my calendar, it doesn't happen. It's right. Not real. If I've got something important, I've got to get it on my calendar. It's so simple. It's so impactful and can really change. You ask me, you know, what's the one thing that really made a difference for me? It was having that structured set of management tools as far as calendar, time planning. That was it. Made all the difference in the world. And I've continued to use that type or some type of an online system through all my businesses.
Being very intentional with your time.
Absolutely.
And keeping it primarily out of your mind. You're not having to rely on your own meat memory. You're putting it into the world and then relying on that infrastructure.
It's in the book.
Yeah. I use reminders all the freaking time. Mm-hmm. Hey, Moogle, you know, remind me to do this at this time tomorrow. Remind me to record mileage in the book. Remind me to call such and such. Constantly firing these things off because I'm brilliant in the moment and horrible about remembering to do the things.
Yeah. Right? Oh, I'm way to get my age. It just gets that much more fun.
Well, yeah. Hopefully we'll have even better personal infrastructure management systems at that point, right? Onboard RAM and chronological reminders, proximity reminders, things like that, right? So
you always get
to your front door and it reminds you to grab your keys, you know?
Well, yeah, and that's funny because I depend on my wife to be my second brain.
Mm-hmm.
And I was joking with a friend I was boxing with today. I said, well, dude, you're supposed to be my second brain while I'm here. And I find as you get older, you really depend on other people to help you through this thought process.
Right.
So.
Well, it's externalized thinking, right?
Yeah.
You're incorporating them into your own gray matter power. So what, if any, are areas that you think you could have or could still stand some improvement? For me, that's staying organized and finishing tasks. I'm great at starting tasks, not so good at finishing them. So what would that be for you?
I got to ditto you on that one, finishing things. My wife will tell you that. She'll tell you the first thing. I've always been one of those big thinker people. And if you can see it, if you can dream it, if you can believe it, it'll happen. I've just always believed that. But you also have to have enough competence to understand what you're talking about. The bosses I hated the most were the ones that just were all blue sky but didn't understand what it took to get something done. And so I've worked really hard on this over the years. I'll continue to work on it as just being more compassionate.
But I think just being a designer has honed my, I guess, my empathic skills, because I have to kind of try to inhabit the mind of a user of a product or a service, yep, or a system, sure, in order to better serve them and kind of walk in a mile in their shoes. Every time I do that, I understand a set of people out in the world a little bit better. And that constantly striving to understand people has led me to be able to, I think, become a better listener. And to then sort of repeat back what I've heard and kind of encapsulate it, abstract that a little bit, and confirm that I've understood what someone's saying. And a lot of times they'll understand what they were saying even better once I've done that, right? Because, right, the, oh, that's a really good way to put that. Yeah. Okay. So that kind of dialogue, that shared understanding, is something that I really value, appreciate. Mm-hmm. This is something I don't have time to ask every guest, but I think we've got time. So I know you've got some hobbies, namely around gaming. I'm curious what you think, what kind of link exists between hobbies and careers, or between hobbies and life goals?
Well, you know, I think that's very different depending on what stage you're at in life. You know, those hobbies that you have as a younger person might be more easily expressed than when you're an older person like myself. So that really changes my hobbies of gaming. I used to have the hobby of playing guitar and singing and writing songs, but I don't anymore. Things just kind of change.
I know you've got the most impressive man cave / shrine to video gaming that I've ever seen. You know, maybe if you had those interests back in the day, you kind of alluded to everyone's going golfing and you're playing games.
Right.
What impact do you think that had on your choices in your career? Not necessarily just the video games over golf, but you said you've been the odd duck out, right?
Yeah.
What hobbies have you had that kind of, I guess, profess that or express that oddness?
Well, like you said, that for the longest time, again, I wouldn't tell people I was a gamer because it just wouldn't be, it'd be frowned upon. Music and those type of things, everybody loved that. When you say I write songs and I play guitar, you know, everybody loves that.
Yeah.
Really nothing else that I can think of.
I can think of one. It's just now come back to me, a vision of this. You are one of the only person I know, but one of the few people I've heard of that can speak backwards. Not necessarily a hobby, but maybe a weird human trick.
That's a very weird human trick.
So if I gave you a short sentence, could you repeat that backwards?
Hit me up.
Okay. Let's see. How about say something like, you can find me on the Facebooks or something along those lines of your choice, but then backwards.
You can find me on Facebook. Kupsafe Naim Denaif Naku. The important thing is when you say something backwards, you have to be able to play it in reverse and have it make sense. So that means you have to say everything phonetically. Like a CH, there is no HC. So you have to keep a CH a CH when you flip it around. You know, like my name, Mark Robert Larson, is Netral Trebar Krom. Rich Lee is Ilchir.
Do this, he'll get a kick out of this at some point. Sebastian Broderick Lee.
Ilkiradarp Nsabstis. And that's a tough one. I have to refine that a little bit, but it's close.
That's I became aware of this. You did a video, I think it was for a friend.
Dan. That was Dan.
It was Dan? Okay. Yeah. And you repeated a paragraph of text while holding a lit cigar, which the cigar illustrated the passage of time and the linear direction of time.
Yeah.
And sort of proved the fact that you weren't just rolling a tape backwards, right? You were actually saying this backwards.
I still have that video.
And the smoke is going the normal direction. And then when you reverse it and the smoke is going the reverse direction, then you can actually hear the proper speech.
Yes.
Yeah.
And that was a lot of fun. I still have that video. And this all started when I was a kid and living in Japan for a couple of years. And on the way back from school, they would bus us to school from Sagamihara, or from Atsugi, Japan to Sagamihara. And a lot of the billboards were in English because of the base presence there. And so as I would look at the billboards, I would just learn to say the words backwards. It's the way I passed the time. And it's been a lot of fun. I still do it to this day. I'll freak my wife out every so often. I like her name backwards. It's Susan Nazus.
Nazus.
I like Nazus. Sounds like a gaming character, you know.
It does. Sounds like an end boss.
It does. Sounds like an end boss. So, what can I say? Yesa Nektub.
And for those listening, I'm going to incorporate a section here at the end where we hear all of Mark's backwards speech reversed, so it actually sounds like it should. And you can marvel alongside me that the world is a better place for this talent.
Thanks, Rich.
So we're nearly out of time. I want to zoom out a little bit and ask two questions before I turn it over to you.
Sure.
So first, since hindsight is 2020, if you could go back, what major decision in your life would you change and why? And, you know, that's a role you would or wouldn't have taken, or going back to school, or pulling the plug in a business, or starting one. Are there any things that stand out?
You know, I think I wouldn't make any major changes to my life. There are times when I think I could have had more compassion for people. I was sent in to clean up some departments and do those type of things. And I didn't like being a hatchet man. I like to kind of go back and redo those, find a way to do them better. I mean, that's the one nice thing about looking back to the past. You can always figure out a way to do it better than you did. But nothing major. I wouldn't split anything up. I think I am where I am and who I am because of what I've done.
Yeah. The first couple episodes, the answer was simple. And it was have been braver. Right, have taken more risks.
I don't know. That's not me.
And it sounds like no, because you took a lot of risks.
I did.
You charged forward on a lot of ventures. You wouldn't, like you say, you wouldn't be who you are and where you are if you hadn't done all that.
Yeah, I had a lot of people who would stop me and say, "How did you get the courage to do that?" It wasn't courage. It was desire. That's one quick thing. Desire, I think, is the operative software of the human condition. Without desire, we don't get anything done. Without desire, we don't build anything. Desire is really the key. So find something you desire and it'll happen.
I like that. What's next for you?
That's a dang good question. You know, so unfortunately, I hate to say it, you know, so much of it's about survival and making sure that I don't fall into become a burden to people over time as this disease progresses, because there is no cure and it is going to progress. So what's next for me is to keep on keeping on. Make sure I don't fall off the track of the things I know I need to be doing.
Right.
And that's it. It's that simple. I'm going to keep it simple, stupid.
Well, that's fine. I look forward to seeing more content from you. And it's easy for me to say that because I'm just consuming it. And you're the one that has to produce it, put all the work and thought into it. But I've enjoyed what I've seen of your Elder Geek gaming show. I definitely encourage listeners to check that out. We'll link that in the show notes. But you've got a really nice, polished delivery, which certainly doesn't. I don't think it's colored by Parkinson's at all. Myself included, I kind of had a mental model of Parkinson's as being completely debilitating, like night and day, black and white, flip the switch.
It can be.
But it's not always like that.
It isn't.
And so you have high function and low function days, just like any of us without Parkinson's, right?
That's
true. We have days where we're more or less effective.
That's true.
And so it really just continues to hold true. I want to see more content out of you on those high-function days.
Yes, thank you. And the people who have told me that, it's meant a lot to me because it does help me keep going. So, yeah, thank you.
Would you take requests in terms of like, well, it'd be interesting if you were to tackle this particular thing in gaming?
Oh, absolutely.
Maybe that's a theme of games across a period of time, or a deep dive into a particular platform.
Absolutely.
And the history of the game making and the console making that went with it. Because I think you've got the analytical yet also creative mind to unearth some interesting stuff and to tell it in compelling ways.
Well, I freed myself from the biggest obstacle, which was to do the first video.
Yeah.
Because it's very tough to look at yourself, because when you're 68, you still think you're 32. Okay.
Right.
And then you look at yourself and you go, ooh. And then you look at your arm shaking with Parkinson's and you go, I don't really want to be perceived that way. And finally, I just jumped in the swimming pool and I said, to hell with it. I'm going to make the videos as often as I can and get them up. And I'm not going to beat myself up about them, but it's done. And this is who I am today. Embracing yourself when you get this age can be a challenge, but you got to do it.
I was long a prisoner of what I thought people thought of me. Perception, right?
Yeah.
And finally, after hearing this message a number of times, I realized the truth of it is that most people really don't think about you very much at all.
I like that.
You're right. They don't really care what's going on in your life. They don't care about the choices you're making.
Yeah.
You know, 99 times out of 10 or out of 100, they're not even aware of what's going on. It's all you in your head, right? You're all wrapped up in yourself and your value and your importance and your, you know, am I sexy? Am I pretty? Am I strong? Am I fast? Whatever. It's all up in your own head. So when you finally release that and say, well, I'm just going to be who I am, that's really cathartic. And it sounds like you came to terms with all that. How many episodes do you have now?
Oh, I only have probably like 15, something like that.
Right.
I did a big one last year, and then I've been trying to do one a week. That's been the thing, but I think I'm finally on track to do that.
My goal with this podcast is one every 2 weeks.
Yeah.
Because that gives me time to record it, to do the edits, to send it off to the guests so they can give it their stamp of approval, get all the show notes together, and then get it out there.
Yeah. Well, I really appreciate you inviting me today. This is going to be fun to do something a little different than I've been doing for the last couple of years.
Yeah.
Get out of the house.
I think it's a fun format. Before we sign off, if you like, can you tell us how we can find out more about you? If there's anything you'd like to share with our listeners, any Mark's words of wisdom or any causes that you'd like to make us aware of?
Well, I will say that Parkinson's Gym is a provider of Rocksteady Boxing in town for people who have Parkinson's. If you know somebody who has Parkinson's, and a lot of people do, who is sitting at home on the couch and not doing anything, the Parkinson's Gym can help them actually work out from a chair or whatever, but you got to get these people moving. I keep running into nurses or different people who say, look, my mom has Parkinson's. I say, great, what's she doing about it? She's doing nothing. So things like the Parkinson's Gym, Title Boxing, which in the past has sponsored Rocksteady, it's not at the current time. Things like the Michael J. Fox Foundation. Great, great, great things are going on. This year, I've been able to see a couple of things that give me some hope. And in the next few years, I might actually get some relief from this. So the Parkinson's Gym is local, and I'd definitely say Michael J. Fox Foundation for anything about Parkinson's.
Good deal. Well, thank you so much, Mark. I hope you have enjoyed this as much as I have.
Absolutely.
I hope this episode finds somebody out there just the right time in their own life. Maybe you're thinking of the big R and the big retirement yourself, or perhaps you're grappling with Parkinson's or some other daunting health issues. So I hope this is of some comfort to you.
I promised to add this to the end of the episode, and here you go. This is Mark Larson speaking backward, and then I've reversed his audio so that you can hear it forward.
Netral Trebar Crom. Mark Larson. Rich Lee is Il Cheer. Rich
Lee. And there you have it, listeners. Mark Larson speaking backwards.
Speaking of listeners, do you find folks out there? The only thing I ask is that if you enjoyed this episode, if this chatter around the unique ways folks end up in their roles is interesting to you, please leave a review on whatever platform you're listening to. And if you feel so inclined, like us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. Until next time, stay focused on your why.